Next up, we're going live to England to talk about Atlantis and the Caribbean, an incredible story about the lost continent of Atlantis. Next, with Andrew Collins on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Andrew Collins, writer, historian, lives in the United Kingdom, is the author of a number of books that challenge the way we perceive the past. Now, back several years ago, Andrew and his colleague Nigel Skinner-Simpson discovered previously unrecorded cave complex beneath the pyramids of Giza, which brought him worldwide acclaim and attention. His new book, we're going to be talking with him about Atlantis in the Caribbean, talks about Plato's Atlantis, and we're going to get into this. This is an incredible story. Andrew, first of all, welcome back to the program. Hope all is well.
Good evening to you, George. Yes, I'm fine, thank you. Speaking to you from Southeast England.
Are you getting ready for Christmas?
I am, yes. Should be a good one, I think.
I always think of the old black and white movie, A Christmas Carol, that was, of course, filmed in England. Just one of those old classics, Andrew. I just love those movies.
Yeah, I always think of Breakfast in Tiffany's, which is Christmas in New York, which I'd love to go to one day.
That's right. So tell me about this work in Atlantis and the Caribbean. This is fascinating. We've talked about Atlantis on this program for years with different thoughts and different theories. Give us yours based on your research.
Well, it's an interesting story because a few years ago, a publisher gave me a deal to do a book on Atlantis, and my initial premise was that Atlantis was something to do with Antarctica. Obviously, there have been books by Graham Hancock and Rosenrand Flemath, mm-hmm. And Charles Hapgood suggesting that the lost continent of Antarctica had previously been occupied, you know, maybe even quite recently in geological history. So I looked at these ideas, but I decided to start again. I decided to get every page that Plato, who is our main source of information on Atlantis, and photocopy every single one of them, put them inside the kitchen. And every morning when I'd come down and have my breakfast, I would stare at all of these pages until I knew virtually every word that Plato said about Atlantis. And the one thing that started to come across very clearly is that Atlantis was not Antarctica. It was very clearly somewhere in the Atlantic Ocean, somewhere on the Western Atlantic seaboard, off the coast of the North American and Central American continent, somewhere in the area of the Caribbean and the Bahamas. And there are many reasons for this. First of all, the fact is that Plato tells us that Atlantis was this huge island empire and that a series of other smaller islands linked that to what he refers to as the opposite continent, which can only be a reference, you know, to America itself. Mm-hmm. And he said that anciently voyagers, mariners, would use these islands to reach the opposite continent, going from his own world, which is obviously in the Mediterranean world. He was a Greek philosopher, and that they would be able to use this and navigate the Atlantic Ocean. So this got me thinking that, you know, just maybe Atlantis was somewhere in this area. Plus, the fact that Plato also states that Atlantis was destroyed in one single night and day, he says. And he said that where it previously had been was now mud shoals and shallows. Now, although he doesn't describe exactly where this is, various other contemporary writers from the same period as Plato also describe these same mud shoals and shallows. But they add something vitally important on top of that, and that is that the area is also covered in seaweed. Large areas of seaweed. Uh-huh. And very obviously, they were talking about what's known as the Sargasso Sea. And this is a massive area of seaweed that stretches right from the mid-Atlantic all the way across to the northern part of the Bahamas. So once again, another indication that Atlantis was somewhere in the area of the Caribbean and the Bahamas. And I began looking even deeper, and the more I looked into Plato, the more it was clear that he was talking about somewhere in this region. But then I concentrated on Atlantis's main island, of which Plato gives a very specific description. Its size, he talks about a range of mountains that border the northern side of it. He talks about this huge plain on the southern part of it. He talks about it being irrigated. He talks about a city on the southern side. He talks about, you know, the whole world of Atlantis and who these Atlanteans were. And I looked into this, and once again, this seems to be a reference to Cuba, the largest of the Caribbean islands. And this seemed to be almost exact. And he said that ancient mariners used to be able to get as far as Atlantis, but that obviously after this cataclysm, which we'll get onto, this no longer took place. And after this, I became convinced that Cuba was Atlantis's flagship, with the sunken, drowned lands, the areas of the Bahamas, because originally the Bahamas was a huge landmass, one that existed probably through until the end of the last ice age, and was only broken up by the rising sea level after this time when all the waters from the, you know, the melted ice caps rose the sea levels and drowned low-lying regions of not just the Bahamas and the Caribbean, but also obviously many other parts of the world. But then we look at the actual cataclysm itself. What was this? Well, Plato tells us that this cataclysm took place at 9600 BC. Well, this just happens to be the end of a very long period of turmoil on the Earth, known as the Younger Dryas event. Now, this lasted for 1,200 years, was triggered very suddenly around 10,800 BC, and seems to have been caused by a comet impact event that took place at that time. There is now mountain evidence coming out of the scientific field showing that this event did take place, and that it absolutely devastated large parts of the Earth, with wildfires and floods. The sun was darkened out for an extremely long period of time. This helped trigger this cold spell that brought on this mini ice age that lasted throughout the whole of this Younger Dryas event, 1,200 years. And also that across a period of several hundred years, there were more wildfires, possibly further cosmic events, and it would have been a terrible time for anybody to have lived on Earth. And it does seem as if Plato was referring to this event, that somehow he managed to get information relating to this event and to the former existence of a landmass in the area of the Bahamas and the Caribbean. And that's what he wrote in his books around 350 BC. Initially one called the Timaeus, and then afterwards a longer account in a book called the Critias. And that essentially is the start, the basis of the whole Atlantis story.
Atlantis, of course, was it hit by this object, Andrew, or was it a tsunami that pulled it down?
I think it was a tsunami that actually pulled it down, but I think it would have also suffered earthquakes and other terrifying events at the time. And the comet itself would seem to have fragmented into countless smaller pieces, probably much like the Tunguska event of 1908, where this probably a fragment of a comet exploded in the air above this vast forest region of Siberia at Tunguska, laying flat trees for miles and miles around. And luckily, there was nobody in the air at the time, so nobody was actually killed. But had that event took place an hour earlier, it would have devastated St. Petersburg. This is in 1908.
That's right.
If you can imagine an event like this, but then times it by 100,000, that is what took place around 10,800 BC, with the largest fragments, according to science, falling in the area of the Great Lakes region of North America. but also larger pieces would have fallen into the Atlantic. And, of course, these would have caused an incredible splash, massive tsunamis, which would have temporarily have drowned the Bahamas and the Caribbean at this time. And I think that this is what Plato tells us about. But, of course, the big question comes is how did Plato know anything about
it? I was just going to ask you, where did he get his information, Andrew?
Well, I think that the clue comes from the discovery of the Americas by Christopher Columbus and the Europeans after 1492, because a lot of the early Spanish chroniclers, some of the friars that got into the different islands of the Caribbean and the Bahamas, spoke to the local people and recorded down their legends and folklore before obviously wiping them out, of course. And a number of these recalled the story of a huge cataclysm that took place that split apart these islands into, you know, the landmass into the islands that you see today. And they talk about a series of things, the darkening of the sky, a serpent that appears in the sky. Some talk about the old moon broke and fell into the sea. Others talk about the floods that came in and drowned everybody other than those that went to the highest mountains or hid inside caves, you know, obviously in high places. And these legends are found all over the Caribbean and also the Bahamas, as far north as Bimini in the Bahamas and as far south as Antigua. And, you know, Tobago and places like this, which are almost on the coast of South America. So this is a widespread belief. And there has only been one cataclysm like this in human history, and that was this Younger Dryas impact event, which occurred, as I said, roughly between 10,800 and 9,600. However, how did Plato get to hear about this? I mean, obviously, in theory, nobody knew about the Americas at that time, or did they? And, of course, the answer is that there is ample evidence of transatlantic contact long before the age of Plato. And the biggest culprits for this, who kept these journeys secret, were the Phoenicians. These were the people who lived in the eastern Mediterranean, the areas today of Lebanon, Syria, Israel, and also their sister colony, who were the Carthaginians of northwest Africa, the area of Tunis and Carthage. And they had outposts, places like Spain. And we know that both the Carthaginians and the Phoenicians were going deeply into the Atlantic long before Plato's time. In fact, there are accounts of them actually navigating the Sargasso Sea, the Sea of Seaweed. So we know they reached that far, but how far did they get? Did they reach the Bahamas and the Caribbean? I think the answer is absolutely yes. And if they did, then they also would have heard these legends and stories about this great cataclysm that had taken place. And I think the chances are that they would have brought back these stories along with other stories relating to the opposite continent, what we know today as the, you know, the American continent. They would have brought this back into the Mediterranean world, where the sailors, the seamen that are coming off the vessels would have told one person or have told somebody else, and eventually this information would have reached the philosophical schools that people like Plato actually belonged to. And, of course, they would have started to debate, you know, what lies in the Western or beyond the Western Ocean. You know, I've heard rumors that there's an opposite continent there, there's islands there. I've heard rumors there was a big landmass there that was destroyed in a cataclysm. And I think that Plato decided that he would put all of this down in writing to create the books that he did, the two accounts of Atlantis, one being the Timaeus, the other being the Critias. And that's where he got his information. His core information for Atlantis, I think, came from Phoenician and Carthaginian mariners. And we can tell that he was influenced by these people because many of the names that he uses in his Atlantis account are of Semitic origin, the Semitic language that was used by the Phoenicians and the Carthaginians. I mean, there is a statement in his work suggesting that his Atlantis account came from Egypt, but there's absolutely nothing in the story that suggests that he did get these ideas from Egypt. They've never been found in Egypt, but what there are is clues that suggest that they came from the Carthaginians and the Phoenicians, and I think that is a good likelihood.
Andrew, why are we so fascinated with Atlantis? Because we all are.
Well, in the late 19th century, Heinrich Schliemann, a great European explorer, discovered Troy, the lost city of Troy. Mm-hmm. And he did this by just following folklore and legend. And he just went to Turkey, and he listened to the local people who pointed him in certain directions, and he started excavating, and he found Troy. So we know that if you follow up legends, you can discover great things. And the legend of Atlantis is the greatest possible discovery that could be made using this type of information. And of course, this has fascinated, humanity for perhaps the last 200 years. And there have been probably thousands of books and certainly as many articles written on this subject. And they've placed Atlantis all the way around the world, from the North Pole to the South Pole to Java to Great Britain, where I live myself, to obviously the North American continent, the South American continent, and, of course, the Caribbean and the Bahamas. And, of course, so you have to say to yourself, well, which of these stories is correct? And, which one has the best evidence?
Right.
Well, obviously, I would say that the Bahamas and the Caribbean, not just because of what I've already told you, but because of the incredible underwater ruins that have been discovered off the Bahamas, which we'll talk about shortly.
Would this be around Bimini as well?
Yeah, absolutely. My good friends and colleagues, Greg and Laura Little, over the last 10 years, have done the most extraordinary work, following up the work of the Edgar Cayce Foundation, of course, to investigate the Bahamas to see whether this could be some kind of lost remnant of Atlantis. And as early as 1968, the so-called Bimini Road was discovered, and this is this massive J-shaped stone formation that was discovered off of the northwest coast of North Bimini. And this is a very, very peculiar structure. I've dove on it myself a couple of times, and it's very difficult to explain. I've also been there when other similar road structures were discovered in Bimini.
How far down, Andrew, how far down is it?
It's only about 10 feet.
Oh, that's not much at all. No.
No, it's not. And this would have been very close to the shore, perhaps even on land, as recently as perhaps 2000 BC. But there are much deeper structures in various parts of the Bahamas. Some of the most fascinating are obviously in the area of Bimini, but the one that's got everybody talking at the moment is Brown's Ruins. And these are named after the couple that found them, whose name was Brown.
All right, hold on for a second, Andrew. We're going to hit this break, but we're going to come back. We'll talk about that. I want you to speculate on the kind of technology that Atlantis might have had. Hollywood possesses it that they had perhaps flying machines, but we'll get into all of that. And we'll talk about Edgar Cayce as well. Andrew Collins, our guest tonight, and phone calls next hour with him on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Andrew Collins with us. He's live in the United Kingdom. We're talking about his latest work, Atlantis in the Caribbean. He's also got a book called Göbekli Tepe, of course. That's an incredible story all by itself. We have time. We'll talk a little bit about that. Andrew, but tell us about the Brown's Ruins in that discovery.
Yeah, this is an incredible structure that was discovered by a couple who had a diving shop on Bimini, and they worked with Greg and Laura Little for years, and they would often go out themselves, and they went deep to the south of Bimini one day, and they came across this massive area. I mean, it's something, you know, several hundred yards across in one particular direction, of these huge stone blocks, many of them perfectly rectangular in shape. And what it appeared is that there seemed to have been some kind of structure that had been hit in a certain direction. It seems possibly from the north or possibly from the northwest to create all this massive teardrop-shaped area, you know, and the most obvious thing is that some kind of tsunami had hit this. I mean, this seems to be the obvious answer here. But what's so interesting about this structure is that it's made of a type of stone, an igneous stone known as blue schist, which is actually it's metamorphic. It's actually caused through the pressure of the earth. And it's absolutely alien to the Bahamas. It is something that you would have to go to somewhere like Jamaica, Hispaniola, or even Cuba to find the nearest sources. There is no stone like this at all in the Bahamas. Or you would have to come to Europe. Places like Italy and Turkey have sources of this. And it's a very specific type. It's been analysed by laboratories, and you know, the question comes is, how did this stone get there? Now, the first thought is, could it have been dropped by as ballast as part of some kind of shipwreck? And indeed, there have actually been shipwrecks at the site. But these are fairly modern, and they are also recorded within old newspapers. And, you know, you find the nails and things like that on the top of the stone blocks. But there is far, far too much here for this to be stone ballast. And once again, the depth of it is only about 10 to 15 feet. However, the importance is that this is on a shoreline that probably dates to around 4000 BC. And that means that the last time that it was above water was around 4000 BC. But it could have been infinitely older. It could easily have gone back to, you know, 10,000 BC, the sort of time of the destruction of Atlantis itself. And this is somewhere that's being investigated at the moment. Obviously, the main players involved in this are trying to work with the Bahamian government to properly investigate the site with archaeologists and geologists. But it's a very, very slow process, and it could take many years for a proper excavation to actually be done there, which is a shame, because obviously we all want the answers to Atlantis as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think we have to be patient. But there are many other places where structures have been found. At Kaisel, which is this little cluster of islands right on the southern end of the Bahamas, very close to Cuba, you have very similar roads to those at Bimini, and a number of features have been discovered in deep water in that area, including petroglyphs on walls, on caves which are now at least 15 to 20 feet deep. And the last time that they would have seen the air would have been at least several thousand years ago. And this tells us that there was a lot of activity going on in these island groups in the past, which is an interesting story in its own right, because the archaeologists tell us that there was nobody on the Bahamas until around 500 to 600 AD.
AD, yeah, that can't be then.
No, I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, the amount of evidence that's been found, for instance, within underwater caves and blue holes themselves tell us that people must have been in the Bahamas several thousand years ago. Plus, they found footprints actually in the mud rock on the edge of the shore of Bimini, which again must be at the minimum of several thousand years. And this is actually accepted by some geologists, but archaeologists. However, the official stance, if you look at on Google today, you'll see that it says that nobody reached the Bahamas until 500-600 AD, which is bizarre. But if you go to the Caribbean, we know that people were definitely on the Caribbean at least by 5,000 to 6,000 BC. And there was quite high culture there at this time. But was there people there at a much earlier date? Well, we're looking for the evidence. I mean, somewhere like Cuba is a very dense place to try and explore as far as its forests. We know that from the early accounts of explorers in the 17th and 18th century, that they were coming across ruins, strange idols, and other objects and artifacts deep inside the interior of Cuba. And many of these, I would like to think, could go back much earlier than the time frame that it's accepted for the occupation of the island. I mean, for instance, we know that there were what's known as the Pleistocene megafauna actually on Cuba. Now, these are the huge grey animals that were destroyed in other parts of the world at the end of the last ice age. Animals like the giant sloth, that existed on Cuba in the past, and yet that disappears at the end of the last ice age. What happened to that? In other parts of the world, we're told that they were hunted out of extinction. But if there was nobody on Cuba in 10,000 BC, why did the giant sloth die out?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a mystery in its own right. Plus, beyond Cuba, obviously, we got Hispaniola, which is another place that's been very poorly investigated right up to the present day. And obviously beyond that, we've got Puerto Rico. And here you have a cave complex that scientists have dated to at least 15 to 20,000, years of age.
Wow.
This is on the island of Mona off of the west coast of Puerto Rico. So if these scientists that have investigated these caves are correct, then quite clearly we did have culture on the Caribbean at this time. And of course, the question then comes is, how does any of this relate to Atlantis? Obviously there are some question marks here.
Mm-hmm.
We know that there is evidence of high culture in this region. But I think what happened is that we think in terms of some kind of, Greek-style civilization existing in Atlantis.
Well, they thought, for example, Atlantis could have been near the island of Santorini, right? A long time ago?
Well, see, this is a very interesting, theory in its own right, because that theory came about because archaeologists, scientists, various other disciplines could not accept that Plato had it right when he said that Atlantis drowned around 9,600 BC. They said he must have it wrong. Civilization only rose up in around 4,000 BC, which of course is, roughly what the Bible would tell us. And of course, this influenced people's views about Atlantis. They also said that people never navigated outside of the Straits of Gibraltar, which obviously are the two pinnacles that mark the entrance and exit to the Mediterranean in ancient times. But we now know that that's incorrect. We've got Göbekli Tepe, this most incredible, sophisticated temple complex in southeast Turkey that was only discovered in the 1990s. That dates back to the very time frame that Plato tells us that Atlantis existed, 9,600 BC. So we know that high culture existed around the world at this time. You could cite other places like, you know, Gunung Padang in Java, a huge pyramid hill that may well date at least to 8,000 BC and beyond, and even Stonehenge in the UK. We now know that the earliest phases of Stonehenge go back to 8,000 BC. So things are changing. In the past, archaeologists believe that Plato must have it wrong, but today there is absolutely nothing to tell us that Plato did get it wrong. He got it right. And he did tell us about a catastrophe that took place in the distant past, and we now have good evidence for that. So there's also no reason why we should not accept that Atlantis was placed exactly where he said it was, and that was beyond the Pillars of Hercules, in the Atlantic Ocean, somewhere in the area or beyond the mud shoals and the Sargasso Sea. By the way, those mud shoals and those shallow waters almost certainly are the shallow waters of the Bahamas themselves. I'm pretty certain of that. And that's what the ancient sources describe. And there are various other accounts from the Greek classical world that talk about islands that were occupied in the area of the Western Atlantic seaboard. They didn't call them Atlantis. They referred to them under the name the Hesperides. Now, this is a term that means essentially something like the islands of the setting sun, from the word Hesper, or Vespa. And these were said to be large inhabited islands with their own navigable rivers, their own, civilizations and things like this. And these almost certainly are the same islands that Plato himself was talking about. So there is much evidence for what Plato says, and I think he actually got it right.
Now, kind of paint us a picture, Andrew, of the region, what it looked like prior to the catastrophe. So with Cuba involved in the Bahamas, what was the landmass there all connected, or were they just separate little islands, maybe more than we have today? What did it look like?
Well, Cuba, for instance, would have been much larger. It would have stretched very much to the south and connected with a smaller island known as the Island of Youth, which is somewhere that I investigated and was very important in my investigations. There's a cave complex there with the most incredible petroglyphs on, which date back several thousand years, and I think were very important in the foundations of Mesoamerican cultures like the Aztec and the Maya and many others. But the landmass would have embraced this at that time, so there would have been this massive, huge plain, very much similar to what Plato describes. There's also areas which are now swamps that in the past would have been much drier areas, perhaps irrigated lowland, where some colleagues of mine have actually detected some large concentric rings inside these swamps, where we actually know that there were other structures. They've also been pinpointed, which could just be the concentric rings that were said to go around the central city of Atlantis, as described by Plato himself in the Critias. So that's a very exciting discovery, and that's one which we hope to mount an expedition to look at within the next few years. But beyond that, there would have possibly been almost like much larger islands between here and the north coast of South America. Then if you go to the north of Cuba, there would only have been a very short, narrow strait linking you with the Bahaman landmass.
Now, could it have been, though, as big as Australia?
I'm trying to imagine Australia. Probably not as large as that, no.
Okay.
But it would have been a very substantial landmass, certainly the Bahamas, which it today is known as the Great Bahama Bank. You've got the Great Bahama Bank and then above it, the Little Bahama Bank. These are easily seen if you look at Google Earth, or particularly, is it Google Ocean, I think. And in the past, this would have been a huge landmass above water. The largest of the Bahaman Islands is the that's gone out of my head at the moment. But the largest of the islands is covered with trees that are almost of an alpine nature. Andros Island, that's it, of course it is. And Andros Island is today a very remote place. Very few people live there. But in the past, I think that this would have been quite a high place that would have been far more tropical in appearance. It would have been an absolutely ideal place for a high culture to have set up. And indeed, some ruins have actually been found within the interior of Andros, actually on land. These were discovered by my colleagues Greg and Laura Little about 10 years ago. And there's some fascinating discoveries to be made within the interior of some of these islands. You know, most of these places are just not explored to the level that you think they might be. I mean, it's actually almost impossible to get to the west side of Andros, for instance. You know, it's also very treacherous, very dangerous. And if you get into trouble, you know, you could die very easily.
Oh, my God. In the inhabitants at the time, Andrew, are we talking about thousands of people, millions of people? How many do you think perished on that horrible day?
I think as far as the Caribbean and the Bahamas are concerned, probably thousands. This is what the catastrophe stories suggest. I have no reason to doubt the fact that there would have been quite substantial populations on these islands. I think the bigger question comes, what level of civilization did they achieve?
Exactly. Did they have the flying machines that Hollywood talks about? Or?
I think it's very unlikely, personally. I think that we had a high culture that was probably similar to that of Göbekli Tepe in southeast Turkey. In other words, very sophisticated carved stones, very sophisticated stone temples. And I think that you'll find that there was something similar going on, because we shouldn't be looking for Greek-style temples in the waters anywhere in the world,
right,
let alone whether we look at the Bahamas or the Caribbean. Because people get this vision that, you know, when we go and we finally discover Atlantis, it's going to be like something out of, you know, Athens or somewhere like that. It's not going to be like that. It's going to be like a megalithic culture, like the megalithic culture of Europe, and of course many other parts of the world. I think this is what we've got to look for. That's more in keeping with the level of sophistication and technology and engineering that we know took place at this time. Now, this has all been wiped out as far as the Americas are concerned. And I think that the reason for this is that great cataclysm, that Younger Dryas impact event, because this stopped everything that was going on. I mean, in North America, for instance, it's been proposed that as many as 75% of the human population, the Clovis people that inhabited large areas of that landmass, were destroyed. They were killed at this time. And something similar was going on in every other part of the world.
And what a tragedy indeed. Andrew, we're going to take this break. We're going to come back in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM with Andrew Collins. I do want to ask about the Edgar Cayce connection. And then, of course, we'll take your phone calls for the rest of the hour as we talk about Atlantis and the Caribbean. Andrew's website, andrewcollins.com. Simple enough. Linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Also, don't forget, little program note, like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. We send out information for you all the time. And email me whenever you want at george@coasttocoastam.com.